Aggression problems between dogs in the same family can be a real challenge. They're often very complex situations. There can be a variety of different types of aggressive behavior involved. We're concerned about the dynamics, not only between the dogs, but the dynamics between the family members, between the family members and the dogs, and so forth. So a lot going on, and no two cases are the same. Everything, every case is different, and you really need to get a handle on all these social dynamics to make the right decision for the owners on what to do. So I'm going to try to give you a good overview of my approach and give you some specific things that you can recommend to pet owners. So, as I mentioned, there are all types of aggression that you might see in these type of problems, and social status problems, hierarchy issues, problems with unstable hierarchies, that's probably the underlying problem for most of these. And you can often see multiple types of problems. You can see problems with the social status, as well as possession problems, so it would be food-related problems, or redirected aggression or territorial issues that might be playing into the social interaction between these dogs. And then there are some dogs that just don't get along with the other dogs. And dogs, you know, I think have temperament differences, and you know, they have things that they desire in mates and people they live with, dogs they live with just like we do. And some dogs just, I don't think, are made to live with each other. And that's even more so with cats. I think there are some cats that are not going to get along with other cats. I did a retrospective study of my aggression cases within the home a couple of years ago for a presentation at the Interdisciplinary Forum for Applied Animal Behavior. And I kind of looked at the distribution of what type of dogs in the family were most likely to be involved. And I had 131 cases, and 89 of those, the female dog was the aggressor dog, and 42, the male dog was the aggressor dog. And then I looked at the victims in these cases, and we grouped these in victims on the three columns on the left are victims where the female was aggressing towards them, and the group on the right were victims where the male was aggressing. And so by and far the biggest problem that I saw were female dogs that are aggressing to other female dogs. So female problems were the most common ones that I saw, and often times the most frustrating problems are correct. It can be a real challenge. So females were the biggest group. Female aggressors towards male dogs was second. The third were male dogs towards other male dogs. Male dogs towards female dogs. And these were dogs, female dogs are aggressive to males and females, and male dogs are aggressive to males and females. And for whatever reason, it seems that the female groups, and I'm going to get myself out on a limb with this, but in the dogs, they have a more difficult time solving hierarchy problems. And often I find they're less inhibited in their aggression. And when I have two female dogs who are fighting, I often see a lot more damage than if it's male-female combination, or even sometimes two male dogs. Okay, so that's interesting. And let's go on to social status problems. The biggest problem, that's the biggest issue with these dogs that fight. And usually due to an unstable hierarchy. What might make the hierarchy unstable and cause problems? Adding a new dog to the house. Reintroducing a family dog. Maybe it's gone to college with a daughter and comes back 3 months later, and that upsets the hierarchy again. Might be maturation of a young dog as it becomes an adolescent. It starts testing its boundaries with other members of the canid pack at home. Might occur if we have an older dog that has been the assertive dog, now it has declining health, and it can't protect its position in the hierarchy at home. It sometimes will result with the loss of a human or canine family member. And then there's a type of aggression that Andrew Lusher, he's at Purdue, described. He refers to it as alliance aggression. And these are problems where the owner seems to have a major input, where the only aggression only occurs in the presence of family members. And the subordinate dog seems to be more confident and acts more offensively in the presence of a family member. So it's like there's an alliance between the family member and the dog. And very likely in these cases, the owner's actually reinforcing some of these dogs' behavior when the dog learns that it can act out with that other dog attacking it in front of the family member. We'll talk about, give you some examples of that here in a little bit. Other issues that might contribute to problems would be social deprivation. If the dog missed that necessary social interaction with other canids during the first 4 months or so of life, that might make it impact its play skills and its social skills in general. Hormones, intact males, intact females, you're more likely to have tension and fights with intact animals in the household. Lack of training and control by family members tends to allow things to get worse. If the owners can't get the dogs to come on command or do appropriate sit-stay in intense situations or get it to do a recall in intense situations, we're going to have more problems. And owner interference. The owner's constantly interfering and not allowing normal social relationships to develop. In some cases, the owner actually inadvertently reinforces the aggressive behavior. If the dog is sitting on the furniture or sitting next to the owner and another dog comes up and the dog by the owner growls, sometimes the owner will go, "Hey, you shouldn't do that to Georgie. He's our friend. He's your brother. You shouldn't do that." And while the dog doesn't understand the concept, it just knows that if it growls, it gets praise or some nice talk from the owner. Or the owner can make things worse by just being real kind of hyper-aroused, agitated by the situation. So we have an owner that's just, you know, just worried about the situation, is constantly scolding dogs and yelling and getting upset. "Oh, my gosh, what are you doing?" Or, "Oh, my gosh, you might do something," and just kind of keeps the dogs on edge. So it increases attention and social arousal. Or things can be made worse if the owner's responding inconsistently. Sometimes tries to talk the dogs nicely out of the situation, sometimes yells at the dog. So there's just a lot of mixed signaling going on. That can make things worse. Here's an example of this. The owner brought in two dogs. Sadie was a beagle mix, very happy dog, pretty assertive around the home, but she barked at people and dogs that she didn't know. So unfamiliar animals, she didn't have the highest confidence level. And she lived with Jack. Jack was a little bit smaller than her, a little 2-year-old Shih Tzu mix, a shy dog, a lap dog, likes people but is hesitant to greet. So we have a dog that's relatively shy, even less confident than Sadie. Sadie, just when I asked about some description of the social behavior around the home, she said Sadie frequently herded Jack and occasionally would stand over him in sort of an assertive way. Typical things that you usually see in a more dominant member of the hierarchy. If Sadie stared at Jack, Jack would tend to look away. That's a normal, acceptable social interaction there, the assertive stare and the appeasement behavior, the submissive response. That's nice to see that in dogs that are communicating appropriately, and that prevents fights and problems. She mentioned that the dogs are starting to fight around food and rough play, and the problem is getting worse. Now, the owner, I asked him about how they viewed the situation, and the owners said that they thought that Jack should be alpha. They thought he should be the alpha because he was smaller and needed to be able to stick up for himself. And so they were going to help him achieve that position in the hierarchy. And so every time Sadie acted kind of assertively and bumped him or stood over him and stared at him or made him act kind of bad and shy like that, they'd scold her. "You can't do that. Don't you do that. That's not right. That's rude." And every time Jack would growl when she approached, she picked Jack up and pet him. So what she was doing is, instead of letting this hierarchy fall out like it should, and they were doing a pretty good job, no major fights and stuff, she was interfering and maintaining that constant tension. So owner education was an important part of this case, as it is with a lot of behavior cases. So, and things were becoming more worse, as you might expect. The classic approach to treating these type of problems is to determine which dog should be alpha dog, which dog should be beta or gamma or whatever down there, and to promote that dog and demote the other dog. And if you look through the veterinary literature and the lay literature, you'll have recommendations like feed the alpha dog first, the proposed alpha dog, feed it first, give it the most food, give it the best treats, give it the best sleeping area, let it walk ahead on walks, and so forth. And there's a lot of problems. I found early on in my practice that there are a lot of problems with doing this, trying to determine who the alpha animal is and then promoting that animal's position in the hierarchy. And this is why. First of all, I found it's darn difficult to decide how the hierarchy should naturally fall out. It's really hard to tell who should be at the top. Now, sometimes it's obvious, but a lot of times you can't tell because you have an inadequate family history. The owner's not paid enough attention, or the owners aren't good observers in regard to normal animal behavior to give you the information you need to know in regard to the posturing and the context in which certain behavior, social behavior is occurring. So it's sometimes difficult to get the information, good quality information. Also, sometimes families will condition social signaling in out-of-context situations. If you look at a group of wolves, what you see is what you get. And if you have a wolf that comes up and puts its chin down on the shoulder area of another wolf, that's an assertive gesture. That's a dominant gesture. And that's you know, pretty much you can tell for sure what you've got there when that happens. But if a dog comes up and puts its head, this is for example more with people, but it puts its head over on the knee of somebody, my standard poodle comes up and leans down like that, puts downward pressure on my knee, is he saying, I'm the boss, I'm the alpha, I own you? Or is he saying, thinking if I do this, I'll probably get petted on the head? Then what I've done is I've reinforced a social interaction that occurs out of context of its real meaning. So that can sometimes happen with the owner's interaction, with the dog's interaction with each other. All right. Another problem is if you pick the wrong dog and you actually have a bully dog, and there are bully dogs that don't use just enough assertiveness to get the point across. I mean, they are constantly aggressive beyond the needs of the situation, and they bite and they attack, even in spite of the fact that the other dogs are acting submissive and saying, hey, I understand you, the boss, don't do this, and the dog just keeps beating up on that dog. If you reinforce that dog's assertive behavior, then you're going to make things a lot worse. Also, and this is a big problem I ran into, is that the family may be very reluctant to demote a favored pet. And so if they've got a senior pet at home that's not as assertive as it used to be, and they've got a young 9-month-old upstart that's very assertive, typically that young dog should be the alpha dog. I mean, that's what you should do, is reinforce that dog. Most people don't want to hear that they got to take their favorite dog and make it eat first and not be on the bed when the other dog's up there and so forth. They don't want any part of that, and I can understand that. Excuse me. Okay, so that's a problem. Or a similar situation, we have a passive resident dog, and you bring a new dog in the house, and that new dog is more assertive, and it's the one that really should have the alpha status. The owner doesn't want, again, their beloved pet to play second fiddle to this new kid on the block. And so that's a problem, getting owner cooperation. So, you know, the approach I've taken years ago, and I think works real well for me, instead of promoting one dog and demoting the other, I demote both dogs. Okay, and I use the leadership exercises I mentioned earlier, nothing in life is free, don't tell me what to do, wait for permission to move, to bump both the dogs down the hierarchy, get both dogs focusing on family members and listening to family members and worrying less about what the other dog is doing. And that approach, among other things, has been very, very successful in my hands in treating these type of problems. All right, so what can we do to treat these problems? Well, the first thing you need to do is you need to get enough information to make the home safe. And so we're going to recommend various levels of control depending on how serious the problem is. So if it's really bad, where they can't even see each other without going off, then we're going to recommend a complete separation. So the dogs can't see each other and maybe not even hear each other, because I want the dogs to start calming down and relaxing. And you got to do this without barrier frustration. If you can find them on either side of a glass door or a screen door or a baby gate, and every time one goes by, this other dog explodes, then when they finally get together, then you're going to have big problems. So you want them to forget about each other and start to calm down. During that time, you can give them lots of exercise and play, try to get the dogs to relax. So make things safe, get them relaxed. In some cases, you might want to consider muzzles if they're out and about to make things safe. If they're not bad enough, they need a muzzle or complete separation. Then using leashes or tie downs if the dog's in the same room together while the family's watching television. Just simply tie one dog over here and one dog over there, give it a Kong toy or something to keep it busy, but they can't get up and wander around and get into a problem while we're trying to make things safe and work on behavior modification. Head halters might help too. So assess the situation, make some decisions, or help the owner make decisions to make things safe. Maybe things are even better than what we've alluded to here. Maybe just more supervision. Just having a family member in the room most of the time or in the yard with the dogs may be enough. But we do need some more control of the dogs in their environment so we can prevent injuries. Next thing we want to do is we want to talk to the owner about all the situations that trigger aggression. So we ID triggering situations. If the dogs fight at the food during feeding time, feed them separately. If the dogs get into fights when an owner pets one dog and the other dog walks in the room, for a while at least, don't pet the dogs in the presence of each other. So identify stimuli. What can we do different to prevent that situation? We take the dogs outside and they get excited at the back door and get into a fight. Well, for the time being, we will close the door, allow one dog come in the kitchen, let that dog outside, and then let the next dog come to the door and let it outside. So whatever we can do, the dogs get territorial aggression. They get in the territorial display and bump into each other and get into a fight. Keep the drapes closed, the blinds closed for a while so we can prevent problems. So talk about all the situations, and they're going to be typically competitive situations or high arousal situations. So these dogs are going to fight typically when they compete over food, toys, treats that fall on the floor, owner, resting areas. Those are situations that you need to explore with the owner. You have problems or not. If you do, this is what we need to do. Or high arousal situations, territorial displays, greetings, things along that line. Or tight spaces. That would be one other situation we want to talk to the owner about. One dog goes to the side of the bed, the other comes in there, they can't maneuver around very well, and they get into a fight. Okay, so competitive situations might be objects, could be toys or stolen objects. Might be food, could be food bowls, food chews, treats. Or prey animals, dead animals they find in the yard might be sources of fights. There could be another competitive situation where you're competing for attention from the owner or resting area. So those are all the situations where you want to ask the owner, how do the dogs do in each one of these competitive situations? The high arousal situations that you want to explore and ask about would be dinner preparation, family dinner time, where the dogs kind of cruise around waiting for food to fall on the ground, high-level arousal. Might simply ask the owners to keep them on tie-downs during dinner time. Greetings, family members or visitors, exiting through doors, preparing for a walk can be a problem. Dogs get excited when they see the leash, bump into each other and fight. Territorial behavior, as I mentioned, they see a dog outside and bump into each other and go for each other. Could be at the fence line, could be at windows in the house, at the door. Appliances. There are some dogs that you turn on a blender or the microwave beeps and they get excited and they run into the kitchen and they bump into each other. It can be a fight. So appliances, play. I have some dogs that if the family is playing with a dog, the other dog comes in and it'll attack that dog, or two dogs start playing real rough and then the dog comes in and attacks one of those. So that's another high arousal situation. And distress vocalizations can be a problem. I've had a couple of cases where if a dog accidentally got stepped on and yiped, the other dog would come over and attack it. One of the questions owners have during the early phase is, what can I do if a fight starts? If it's in the yard, sometimes a water hose will work real well. Inside, this is one of the best products I found. It's called Direct Stop. I mentioned it earlier. It's packaged like pepper spray, but it's a citronella spray that's pH to balanced to a neutral pH, so you can spray it right in the dog's face without hurting it. And it's a pretty solid spray that goes out for about 7 or 8 feet. And you can, if two dogs get into it, you just take it and go right up and just spray them both in the face. The effect you get in most dogs, not all, there are some dogs that you almost need a bite stick to break them up, but the effect you get in most dogs is the same thing you would get if you threw a small bucket of cold water in the dog's face. And they tend to stop and startle and shake their heads and wipe their paws on their face and so forth. It usually gives you just enough time to get the dogs out of there. Another product that I'm going to consider trying, I learned about from a client the day before I left to come to this meeting, and she has a pit bull. No, she had. Let's see, she had a boxer who's a bully dog, and a pit bull cross, and two other boxers, and we've had major problems getting them to get along together. And finally, with one of the dogs on high doses of Prozac, we got to a point where in the last 3 months they've not had any fights. And somebody throws a female pit bull over the lady's fence, and she decides she wants to save this pit bull. Fortunately, a very sweet dog, but the male boxer, who's a bully dog, doesn't like any of the dogs at all. And so he's constantly attacking this dog, and she's starting to fight back and show aggression in other situations. And I said, well, don't forget about using the Direct Stop if they get into a fight. And she said the Direct Stop never worked. They were too intense for these dogs and didn't work. But what I've been using is a Class A fire extinguisher. And she works for OSHA, and I didn't know this, but the Class A fire extinguishers are only water. The other ones for like B and C, they're for like electrical fires and chemical fires and things like that. And so it's a safe product. She said you could buy small units for about $20 in most hardware stores. So that might be something that you could explore if the dogs aren't responding to Direct Stop. Okay. Always learn something from my clients. All right. So since the hierarchy problems are the underlying problem in most of these cases, how do we stabilize a hierarchy? We want to put some structure in the dog's life and have them focusing on family members. So we're going to review obedience with the owners and the dogs. We want these dogs to sit on command, stay on command, and come on command. And so we'll do the real simple exercises the owners can do at home. I'll have them do two things, a come, sit, stay exercise and a recall exercise. And we talked about the food lure training. That's what I usually do with these guys. And so at dinner time, one dog at a time, you take a piece of food, you show it to the dog, and you back up, and you go, come, sit, stay, okay, give the dog a treat, you back up, come sit, stay. You start out with just 1 second, and then every few repetitions you add another second. Once you can get up to 15 seconds, then you work on distance. Then it's come, sit, stay, 1 step back while the dog stays, just for a few seconds, and you repeat that, working up to 15. So you gradually, you work on time first, and then you work on distance. That's the easiest way to do stays. Work on time first, then work on distance. For the recall, I simply have them take a treat and throw the treat 5 or 6 feet to make the dog go away. Once it picks it up, then they're going to go, Rover, as soon as the dog looks. We've talked about this before. Show it a treat and come and call it back and do this over and over again. Because I want to, even though the dogs will come on command most of the time, I want this dog, when it hears this name right away, it's going to whip its head around. And when it sees that hand signal, it's going to come running to the owner. And because we can use that to make situations safe later on, as we're going to describe here. So we want to work on that. We want to demote both dogs, as I mentioned. And so we're going to do nothing in life is free. The dogs sit before they get everything and anything they want or need. Don't tell me what to do. The dogs are not allowed to solicit attention from family members by pushing or whining or pawing. That behavior is ignored, or else as the dog walks up, the owner asks the dog to sit before it does pushy behavior, because this aggressive behavior is pushy, bossy behavior in general. And we want to teach these dogs that they can't push anybody around or tell anybody what to do at all. So we don't allow them to do that. And then we practice don't move without permission, which means every time the owner moves and whatever dog it's with would normally follow, what they do is before they move, they hesitate and they go sit, stay, okay, release the dog, maybe go to an area of the house and get a drink of water, sit, stay, okay, release the dog, go someplace else in the house. So before the dogs go from room to room with the owner, before they go up and down stairs, in and out of the house, the dog should sit and stay. And what we're doing here, again, remind the dog, the family's in control, focus on family members. And every time we're having our part of our packs doing something socially, we're getting the dog to hesitate and look to a family member for some instruction on what to do next. Instead of having a social situation, the dog says, okay, something's happening. What am I going to do to deal with this situation? So we're hoping to develop some hesitancy and focus on the owner situation, where maybe one dog's here and another dog comes up and said this dog just reacting, maybe it'll hesitate, look to the owner for an obedience command. Very importantly, we want the owner to reward acceptable social behavior. So typically, the family's sitting around on the edge of their chairs waiting for a problem. And when they see a situation, they think, oh my gosh, I think this girl's going to attack this other girl or something. They're going no or stop or whatever. And they're looking for bad behavior, and then they're getting nervous and making things worse. And so what I tell them is, instead, look for good behavior. And anytime you see any orienting or any kind of a response that says, okay, I know this dog's here and it's doing something, but doesn't involve aggression, simply give that dog a treat. And so if we're in a situation where the dogs are loose, but they fight once in a while, maybe one dog runs by the other, one dog gets up and barks at something he's outside, and the second dog just kind of looks at the dog, it gets a treat. So anytime there's an orienting or some kind of response to one dog and it doesn't involve aggression, we're rewarding the dog. So there's a lot of happy talk and good dog and treats, and we're promoting a nice, relaxed atmosphere. We want to make sure you don't reinforce an unacceptable behavior. So if the dog, you've got to tell the owner that they can't be petting this dog if he growls when somebody comes up. A little interruption is appropriate. No heavy punishment, because we don't want to make this dog nervous about the dog coming up. So a little, or hey, or what you doing? You know, just something to make the dog look. And then if it's in a situation where you can then make that dog sit or do some command, then we can take more control of the situation. But don't reinforce the behavior. Very importantly, we want to avoid what I call preemptive scolding. So this is why the recall is so important. As the people will sit around watching for the dog to make a mistake, and maybe one dog's lying down, another dog kind of comes up and sniffing around, and the owner's just feeling, I don't like this situation. There's no growling or anything, but I'm afraid if it gets a little bit closer, there's going to be a problem. And the tendency is for the owner to say, leave it. Don't you do that. Don't you get any closer. You better be good and not bite her in the nose. And so they create, so we got dogs that are already a little bit tense, and what happens is the owner can push them over, and I've seen problems like that, where the owner yells, and the dog goes into a full-blown attack. So we want to avoid preemptive scolding. We want to look for potential problem situations, but we want to do, anticipate them, and call the pet with an upbeat tone. So if we got that good recall, then we can look for problems, and not scold, but we can call the dog out. And if we've made a mistake, if the dog wasn't going to attack anyway, if we happily call the dog out, we're better off than making a mistake and scolding the dog that wasn't going to attack anyway. So that recall is really important. Use that hand signal. As I mentioned earlier, having a double signal, you're going to get a stronger response. Another thing the owner might do is actually get up and walk away to lure the dog. So instead of just going Rover come, they could go Rover come and take a step away. And then some dogs are more likely to get up and move than if they were, we weren't moving at all. So that can help lure the dog over. The other thing we have to do is rebuild our friendly relationship. So relaxed tone of voice. Bill Campbell mentioned years ago in one of his first behavior books to jolly up the dogs that are aggressive or fearful. And so just a lot of upbeat talk and silly talk. That's helpful. Don't take good behavior for granted. It's important enough. I mentioned this again. Look for good behavior and reward it. The few dogs, the owners will say they love to go on car rides. They never have a problem. They're both happy. They can move around. They're great. Take those dogs on more car rides together. That's not always safe, but if it is, that's something they can do. Most of these dogs are more likely to fight inside and more likely to fight if there's a family member around for a variety of reasons. And many of them, I'd say 95% of them, the owner will say, the dogs are fine in the yard. They play, they run around, they bark, they have a good time. They never fight in the yard. So in this case, get them out in the yard more often. Let them play together and build that bond and reaffirm appropriate social interaction. Take them to parks more, wherever they can have fun and not focused on each other or be grumpy with each other. Exercise is important. Aerobic exercise brings the arousal level down. That's good. It's also a positive thing the dogs can do together. Even if they're pretty testy with each other, where we can't leave them in a room together, we might be able to have two family members with a dog on a leash outside them and walk along, looking for good behavior. Maybe one dog pulls ahead or barks, and the other dog looks at it, give them a treat for not being aggressive. This other dog decides to do something, bumps in the owner, pulls over this way, and this dog looks, it's not aggressive, give him a treat. So look for good behavior and reward it. Explore new fun areas with the dog. Do a lot of fun things with the dog. And also on walks. Walks are great because the dogs tend to focus more on what's happening in the environment and less on each other. So I would start out with the dogs on the outside, then one dog between the family members, then that dog back on the outside, the other dog between the family members. When they're doing real well, then you walk them in between the family members, starting out maybe 6 feet apart, and gradually getting closer like that. All right, so we've put some structure into life, we've reviewed obedience training, we've made things safe. Then we've got to look at specific situations where we're having aggression and deciding how to handle these hot situations. So depending on the situation, we may want to talk about more owner control, using leashes, tie-downs, head halters, or muzzles. If the dogs fight at dinner time, we could just feed them separately on the other side of a baby gate maybe. Or if we'd like to promote relaxed behavior in the same room while they're eating, we might use a tie-down in the kitchen. Tie one dog down over here with a food bowl, tie the other dog 8 feet away. That way they can eat, they can move around a little bit. Nobody's threatened, nobody can get in the other food bowl, and they can have dinner time together without having fights or making things worse. Verbal control is really important. If the dogs are aggressive during greetings, then we teach the dog to assist stay at greeting. So instead of just let them jump around and get crazy and bump into each other, work with one dog at a time, teaching it, you know, just go outside and come in. Repeatedly come in and have that dog do a sit-stay for longer and longer periods. Start out using treats, gradually phase the treats out. Then work with the other dog, then work with two dogs. So take control of those situations. The dogs get into a fight before they go out in the backyard. Teach the dogs to sit-stay at the back door, one dog at a time, then two dogs, and then teach them to be released one dog at a time. You have them, we'll sit and stay, and you say, Arnie, go, are you still doing a stay with this dog? And then you let the second dog go out there. It takes a lot of work on the owner's part, but they need a lot more control of these dogs so they don't leave it up to the dog to decide on how they're going to act in these situations. With competitive situations, objects, food, resting areas, sometimes the easiest thing is just avoidance. So the dogs never eat together the rest of their lives. They never get food chews together. Maybe there's certain special toys that they're never going to have. So just avoiding the problem prevents them from being aggressive. Sometimes that's the easiest thing. Avoidance. Tie downs during dinner time, we talked about that. If I'm having possessive problems, then one thing I can kind of do to give the dog the idea that it can't own everything is teach it to drop things on command. And if you go to my website, westwoodanimalhospital.com, go to behavior information area and dog articles, there's an article on teaching dogs to play fetch, where the primary concern is actually making the dog getting the dog to drop objects on command. So we teach the dog to drop objects so it's not so possessive of things. That can be part of the program. And then desensitization and counterconditioning. So if we have a dog that's aggressive when the other dog comes in the room and gets within, let's say, 3 feet while that dog's eating, then we'll put this dog on a tie down with its food bowl, and we'll get the other dog, and if 3 feet's the threshold, we'll do desensitization and counterconditioning. Like we mentioned with our fearful dogs, we come in maybe 6 feet away, and we walk by, and the dog that's eating will probably glance over shoulder and look at the dog, but because it's 6 feet away, not inside that three-foot threshold, it'll probably just watch. And if it watches, it's not aggressive, we toss a little chunk of chicken in the food bowl. And then we walk away or outside the room, and they come back at 6 feet again. And the dog looks and sees that other dog, but it's not aggressive. It gets a chunk of chicken. So hopefully that dog will get to the point where he says, man, I wish old Bob would come in here and more often when I'm eating, because whenever he comes in here, this chicken shows up in my food. And then gradually bring the dog closer and closer. So that would be an example of using counterconditioning and desensitization in that type of situation. A competitive situation over family members, the family has to have control. And so if I have a dog sitting here and another dog comes up, then we have some tension and maybe some growling. Anytime the second dog appears, right away I'm going to give this dog a command. Because right away I want control, so I'm going to have him maybe do a down and a stay, use a treat if necessary, call the other dog up, but call him right up to this side of me, sit and a stay with a treat. Okay, and then maybe let this dog sit up, give it a treat, pet it a little bit, then do a sit-stay, then make this dog do a command, maybe shake hands, give it a treat, tell it to stay again. So I go back and forth with obedience commands and treats. So I've got control. I know where those dogs are sitting, what they're doing. They're focusing on me and the treats, and I'm rewarding inhibited behavior. And it becomes a relaxed situation where they're both getting a lot of attention. Nobody's losing any attention. Let's see, Maria and Joey. Maria is a 6-year-old on the left there, our left, and Joey is on the right there, the 3-year-old dog. And Maria would sit in the owner's lap and growl whenever Joey approached. Okay, so Maria would sit up there, growl when Joey would come up, and they were both probably about 15 or 16 pound dogs, small kids. And the owner would tell her, "Honey, you shouldn't do that." Okay, "Honey, you shouldn't do that. Don't do that to Joey. I don't like when my good girl's bad." You know, stuff like that. And no other problems. These dogs got along great. They would sleep together. They'd play together. No other problems at all. Not sure exactly why the aggression started, but certainly she was reinforcing the behavior. So in that case, we do desensitization and counterconditioning. I think what we did here is we had the dog in the lap. Now, you can't make that dog in the lap do sits and stays like I like to do if the dog's on the floor. So we simply had somebody put a leash on Joey and walk Joey right into the doorway. So we were far enough away, there was no growling. And as soon as Maria oriented, "Oh, there's Joey in the doorway," we said, "Good girl," and gave her a treat. And we took Joey out of sight. We brought him in the doorway. And you did that about 10 times. And you brought Joey in about a foot and repeated that. And then 2 feet, 3 feet, gradually approaching and then doing walk-bys and then approaches and walk-bys and then disappearing and then doing approaches and walk-bys and so forth. And so Maria started being real happy to see Joey around because good things were happening. And if she did growl, I just said, just interrupt the behavior. Don't punish her. Don't correct her. Just go, "Hey," just something like that. So the dog would look and then keep its attention at that point and then back up with a distance on the conditioning exercises. dinner preparation, we could just keep the dogs out of the room. Or again, we might use tie downs during dinner preparation or tie downs and give them Kong toy stuff with food. Family dinner time, the same thing. Tie down and toy stuff with food, or just get them out of the situation. But I kind of like the tie downs if it's not too much hassle for the owners, because it allows the dogs to be in the room and do something happy together, rather than just having them completely separate. Greetings, sit stays at greetings, we talked about that. Same way with exiting through the door, preparing for a walk, sit stay before they get a leash on, and so forth. So that obedience that we talked about initially, sit, stay, come on command, really, really important. They need to work with the dog enough so they got dependable, consistent responses in just those three commands. Territorial behavior, we might have to curb that, might have to keep the blinds closed or keep the drapes closed so the dogs can't see out and get excited. We might need to put motion-activated alarms on the top of couches so the dogs don't get up in furniture and get into fights. So, or we might want to address the territorial behavior by itself with desensitization and counterconditioning so they just don't get so excited. Bark collars could work. That would be expensive, but a simple thing. Not a shock collar. We don't want to be using shock collars because the danger with shock is it can cause, the pain can cause aggression. And I've seen problems in general. I don't like shock bark collars, but they can be effective and they can be humane if the stimulus is appropriate for the dog. But if you have one dog, two dogs go up and one dog, they bump into each other and one dog barks and gets shocked, he may assume that the dog next to him caused the pain and you have redirected aggression towards the dog or towards the person that's holding the dog by the collar. So if somebody's dead set on using one of these collars, you need to explain what the danger is. You know, not real frequently do you have problems like that, but it can occur. All right, so we have to address that. With appliances, we can use desensitization and counterconditioning. Let's say the dogs get excited, go off, and the blender goes on, or the can opener. That would be even more likely. What we do is we cover the can opener with about 10 towels, so it just barely whirs. So it's just loud enough where the dogs orient, but don't get aroused. And whenever they orient, they do a sit stay for a treat. And you do that quite a few times until you get to a point. Actually, when the dog hears a noise, it either looks to the owner, or if they're really doing well with the counter conditioning, they look and they sit, because that becomes a cue that if they sit, they're going to get a treat. Then you take off some covering, so it's a little louder until eventually the noise of that becomes a cue that to come up and sit and stay, not come up and get crazy. Play with family members and pets. You can do counter conditioning exercises, the same type of thing. You have a dog on a leash with a family member, and we know that if the family member really roughhouses with a second dog, this dog will come over and attack. Well, what we do is we just start a little bit of play, just enough for that dog's ears to kind of pick up a little bit, and then we give it a stay command. Okay, and then we back up, and we do a little bit more, and we give that dog a stay command. And we do a little bit more a few times, and so that when the family gets into vigorous play with the other dog, instead of dog thinking, okay, I got to stop this or control it or whatever he's going on in that fuzzy head of his, he starts thinking, okay, they're playing. There must be somebody around here with a treat for me. Okay. Distress vocalizations, that's hard. If you have a dog that if you step on his tail and it cries and the other dog attacks it, then you just got to be careful about not stepping on that dog's tail or treating its ear problem or whatever that makes it yite. Important considerations here, really important enough to mention these again. Always look for and reward desirable behavior. Really a simple thing to do. Don't reinforce undesirable behavior. Avoid preemptive scoldings. Use your recalls to safeguard situations and prevent aggression. Edith and Harriet. Edith, the dog on the left, would sit on the sofa. Harriet would come up and approach, kind of stare, and would growl. Edith would growl back. Harriet, the dog on the right, would growl and maybe lunge a little bit and give it an inhibited nip. Edith would usually leave. So this happened not unfrequently. Typically, they saw them without any bloodshed. 5 days ago, before I saw the dogs, the owner called up because she's really worried because Harriet, the dog on the right, viciously attacked Edith. And the situation was that they were coming up and doing this kind of stare down type of thing, and the owner was just kind of had frazzled and had enough and yelled. And that was just enough to put Harriet over the edge, and she went into a full-blown attack to Edith. On walks, other things that can be done on walks, if we have dogs that they're pretty aggressive and we're only having them out on leash to start out with, we can do pass-bys and circles and approaches. And what I mean by that is we walk the dogs for a while, wear them out about halfway through the walk, we find a vacant lot or something, and we get off. Hello? Somebody lean against the light back there, maybe? Okay. Thank you. Okay. Then you stop and you imagine a square 30 by 30 feet, and you put one person, a dog, facing this way on the square, and at the opposite corner, you put the other dog facing the other way. You just simply pass by with the dogs. Just do pass-bys like this back and forth, gradually getting closer. And it just allows a situation where the dogs are moving where you can reward them every time for glancing over and not being aggressive. So you stop, do some pass-bys, then you can do some circles. One dog does a sit-stay, and the other a family member and a dog, maybe at 15 or whatever safe distance is, does sit-stays and down-stays, and they come around like this to the dog. And when they come around, this dog looks over there. He gets a treat for not being aggressive. You just do a few circles like that. Then this dog does a sit-stay, and we circle around here. So we just setting up a safe control situation where the dogs can be moving in various relationships around each other and be constantly giving up control to family members and getting rewarded for good behavior. And approaches involve just head-on approach, sit-stay treat, approach sit-stay treat, maybe go to a sideways and then again and back up and again. So they're constantly approaching, getting closer and closer to the dogs and rewarding. Again, just simply looking for good behavior and rewarding it. In the home, again, we want total safe control. What we'll do with these dogs that can't be safe together but can be in the room without just going completely crazy, we'll pick times like during watching movies or reading where we can have two family members about 12 feet away from each other, and we'll put the dogs on tie downs. Okay? And so while we're watching television, we're also watching the dogs, and maybe at some point one dog will get up and stretch, and the other dog looks, he gets a treat for not being aggressive. This dog gets up and hears something and barks, and he's not aggressive, he gets another treat. This dog gets up and goes with a family member to the bathroom or something, and this dog watches them go and is not aggressive, he gets a treat for that. And so you look for good, continue to look for good behavior, and reward it. Let's see, look for acceptable behavior. And then what you're going to do is you're going to gradually allow the dogs to have more freedom. So once you can have them in the room enough nights in a row where you're pretty relaxed, there's not a lot of aggressive gesturing and so forth, then at some point you'll make the decision to drop the to release one of the dogs. You'll still leave a leash on it for to drag around in case you need to grab it right away, but you let it have some freedom again, continue to look for good behavior and reward it. And the one you're going to release first is probably the one that's been attacked because it's least likely to go over and get in the face of the other dog that's on a tie down. At that point, you might want to consider a muzzle, possibly, for one or both dogs. And then once you're doing well with the victim dog wandering around, then you put it back on a leash and let the aggressor dog wander around, dragging a leash and either a gentle leader on it or maybe a muzzle on it to be safe. And once you're comfortable at that point where this dog can wander around, there's no problems, then you release both dogs during supervised sessions and both of them drag a leash around so you can grab them and pull them apart if you need to. So that's kind of, you know, there are a lot of variations depending on the family and the size of the house and so forth, but that's kind of the general approach there. Punishment typically makes things worse, as the case with most behavior problems. What it'll do sometimes, though, is if the dog is getting harshly punished every time it acts aggressive, sometimes all you'll do is get rid of the signals without reducing the emotion and the desire to attack. And so you have a dog that doesn't growl anymore or bark aggressively because it gets hurt every time because you nail it with a prong collar, and that allows maybe the other dog to get close enough where then they have fight. So at the very best, and that's not the best, you don't remove the motivation for aggression, you just remove the signals that are associated with it. And it certainly can create more anxiety. The dog's not going to be relaxed if it gets hurt every time it's around the other dog, and lower the threshold for aggression. You can also have redirected aggression directed towards a family member. That's a problem. So shock collars, pinch collars, choke chains used in a punitive manner, and alpha rolls, all these things should be avoided with these cases. What about surgery? Castration will be successful, not in all dogs. In the study Ben Hart did some years ago, there was about a 60% success rate in reducing inner dog aggression. I would recommend both dogs be castrated. If the owner's only going to castrate one, I recommend the more submissive dog, the one that's least likely to be dominant. And what we're thinking there is we bring that dog down another notch even, but if we bring the other one down, maybe we have two dogs at the same level, and that might be a problem. You know, no data to support that, but that's empirically, that's what my recommendation is. Spaying is not as likely to help unless we have a problem that's associated with estrus. So this dog gets testy every time she goes in estrus, then we're going to, might think, of, if they can, think about spaying her if it's not a dog they're showing. Now, some of these dogs are just so crazy aggressive that they can't even see each other. They can't even think about each other without being aggressive. That the only way you can get them to calm down enough is to put them on medication. And these are the drugs I usually use. Usually I use Prozac because it's the least expensive of the two, and there's nothing to say that I know of that says Paxil is going to be more successful. But I use Prozac. And I'll start out at about a quarter to a half a milligram per pound once a day. And there's some of them and it takes about 2 to 4 weeks to become effective, like we mentioned. So the owner shouldn't get frustrated if there's no effect within the first 2 weeks. 2 to 4 weeks. I always reevaluate in 4 weeks then to see how we're doing. And if it looks like we got a little improvement but not enough, then I might go up a little bit more. And some dogs I'll go up as high as 3/4 of a milligram per pound. And in rare cases where it might be a life-saving proposition, I've gone up to a full milligram per pound. If you increase it and the dog starts becoming either real excessively sedate, or inactive or stumbly, or becomes agitated, you know, then you got to rethink what the drug you're using. Maybe go to Paxil, or maybe, well, I would go to Paxil. Usually one or the other is going to work for you. And then you keep the dog on it as long as you need to, and that's going to be until the owner feels comfortable with the recent progress and behavior of the dogs. And so you communicate with the owner on a monthly or bi-monthly basis. And once the owner says, yeah, you know, these dogs have been so good for the last 5 or 6 weeks or the last 5 or 6 months that I'm starting to be comfortable about their behavior, we start gradually increasing or decreasing the medication, try to get them off. Most cases, if the owner is doing a lot of behavior modification, you can do that. But there are some cases where the dogs come off, they become fighting again, and they stay on it lifelong. How long does this session last? I got five minutes. Okay. What about tricyclic antidepressants? Well, there was one study done where they looked at clomipramine, and they looked at dominance-related aggression of dogs towards people, and they found clomipramine to be ineffective in that case. So if it's ineffective in treating that type of social status problem, it's going to be effective in treating the dogs with social status problems. It makes me think that it probably wouldn't. And SSRIs are more serotonergic than TCAs, and so you know I think it makes sense to consider that first. Also, there's a advice against using Clomicalm in aggressive dogs on the label, so that's something that's a concern too in regards to liability. Progestins, Ovaban was commonly used for all types of behavior problems about 20, 30 years ago. But drugs like Ovaban, while they do reduce reactivity and promote some calmness, they're not nearly as effective in treating any of the behavior problems you used to use them for, never as effective as SSRIs and TCAs and benzodiazepines and so forth, and they have a lot of side effects. So no behaviorists are using those anymore, or if they would just think about using a progestin, it would be if everything else we've used has failed, and this may be the last thing we might try doing. But not typically not a good choice. So this is what we're hoping to gain here. The guys are going to be buddies again. Okay, any questions about this issue? Yes. Yeah. What about the age of neutering the animal? Do you expect to see get the same behavior results? In Ben Hart's study, he found that it wasn't age dependent. And if it was a dog that was going to be in that group that was going to respond to castration, that they were just as likely to respond to it if it was done at 6 months of age or 9 months or 3 years of age. So So it's still worth a shot there. Yeah. If they can, if they can just make a noise like a hand clap or a shake can or a loud whistle enough to get the dogs to orient towards the owner, that's what you want to do. I mean, well, or call the dog out of it with recall. So say the dog's name and call it out of it. Use a sharp noise to make the dogs orient away from each other. Those might be possibilities. As long as that stimulus isn't strong enough that it actually, you know, causes agitation. Then immediately after a fight, you want to time out. So you separate the dogs until they're calm. Yeah, once they're separated, I would take turns doing fun things with them. Okay, then I'd go off and have our two family members walk the dogs, review obedience for treats, do a lot of fun stuff. And that's a problem. Oftentimes, owners, there's an aggression problem, and I see this probably more often with the dog that attacks a child, maybe or bites a child. They yell at the dog, and they whack it, and they put it up, and then the rest of the evening, every time they see the dogs, they're, oh, you damn dog, don't you do that, you know, and they continue this tension. The dog is not doing anything bad at that time, and it doesn't understand why the owner's acting so weird. So once it's over, then I want the dogs to be relaxed again. And so separate them, let them calm down, exercise, play, whatever you can do to accomplish that. One more question, then I've got to go someplace else and lecture. I'm not sure where that is yet. Yes? Uh-huh. So the cocker's aggressive when the vishla tries to play with her. Yeah. Is it because the vishla is a young, active dog that's overwhelming this dog? Okay. Then probably what you want to do, it's hard to teach play behavior, but you might be able to take some of the spunk out of that, the vishla. You know, don't supervise them more, don't let them get into fights, and then run that little vishla's butt off before you let them together to play. And so that'll allow the other dog to control the situation maybe a little more easily, or maybe even enjoy some light play without ending up in aggression. Thanks a lot for attending all day. You guys have been great.